You're listening to The Lawman's Lounge, a podcast dedicated to help you take back control of your life and your business. Here's your host, Bill, the Lawman Umansky.
I'm really, really happy to be back. I know that you had a trip up in New York with your wife. Every time I think of wife, it's just, you've been married, what, a year?
Yeah. We actually just took our 1 year anniversary to New York City.
And what was great is that I think you purposely hid yourself on social and it was really hard for you and your wife, especially for your wife to do, so that I wouldn't track you down as if I was tracking your every move in New York.
Well, let's be honest. I always hide myself on social.
But your wife doesn't.
Yeah, she does not. I think there's almost probably 15 or 20 stories right now, like today, this morning alone.
I love when she posts stories because I have lots of communication with her offline on Instagram. I just DM her like, oh, that's a great story, or yeah. Your outfit looks Jeff's nice, that, yeah. Or Jeff's smile looks great, or look at Jeff.
Yeah.
She's like, yeah.
You enjoy that though. You enjoy seeing your team, like what they do in their personal lives.
I mean, some of them. I mean,
some.
Yeah, not all of them. I mean, you know, like I do think it's interesting. I mean, I love watching you try to teach your son how to skate. You're an athletic guy, and it's really funny because I think that's why you're so laid back, is that you're just good at sports and you don't need to prove yourself or anything, and you're older now, so you don't care. But when you teach your son, that's when that intensity comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. That's a good point.
I know.
I feel like I need to be sitting on a couch right now.
No, I don't want to analyze you because we have someone that loves to analyze me.
All right.
And that's not what this show is going to be about. But she's amazing. And I'll tell you, I'll probably get in trouble with some of our female listeners, but she's amazing, amazing business owner. And her name is Jennifer Gore Cuthbert. I always call her Jennifer Gore. I think that's her regular name. I call her Jen, but she's amazing. She's a lawyer in Atlanta. I'm going to do a brief introduction, but Jen is just someone I've been in different masterminds with. And you always know people that are like superstars because they're the kind of people that are like caring and they like to give. And she never really makes it about herself, but she's so damn entertaining that you can just listen to her for hours and she's quick-witted. What I love about her too is that she doesn't need to put posts up about her being a strong woman or, you know, this is where I'm going to get myself in trouble. She just doesn't need to do that. She just is a strong person, strong woman. She's married. She's got 3 kids. She's running a thriving PI practice in Atlanta. But, you know, she's also the type, unlike me and 20 years older than her, but she wants to scale big time. And she's gone from one coaching program into a much larger coaching program because she's got big designs. And what's interesting is I don't think it's all ego-based. I think it's just, she wants to move. She wants to conquer. She wants to achieve for her family, for herself. So she's amazing. I'll just do a very brief intro. She'll tell you that when she was in college, she was seriously hurt in a car accident. This is a sad story. I think her high school boyfriend also died after a motorcycle crash. And I think some of those things, along with some others, kind of got her into becoming a lawyer. We can talk briefly about that with her.
Yeah.
And she's won a ton of awards, you know, best 40 under 40 civil plaintiff lawyers, national trial lawyers, AVO, fastest growing law firm, top 20 in 2018, 2019, 2020. But really, that to me is great and everything. But once you listen to her, I don't think you really, you know, Jen's the type of person that you don't need to actually say a lot of stuff about and say, oh, listen to her. Just listen to her and you'll get a lot from her. It's what she says that makes her so damn interesting because she knows, she learns lessons, she tries to apply them, and she's always very, very willing to learn so she can teach others. And what's great is I think she may already be doing this, is coaching other women entrepreneurs on topics such as business, practice management, domestic management, marketing. And I think it is tough because really, even though I said this, that she doesn't have to post about being a strong woman, women definitely have unique challenges that men may or may not have as mothers and as wives. And Jen is prepared to talk about that today. Right, Jen? Hello, welcome to the show.
Right here. Thanks for having me, Bill. This is so much fun. I'm an avid listener, as you know, of your podcast. You've had so many amazing people on. So it's such a privilege to be with you today. And we always have a good time together. So I'm looking forward to this conversation.
I want to buy your Ritz Carlton jacket. I don't want to buy it though. I need a free one. I went to the Ritz the other day. I'm like, jacket was too expensive for me. So I'm trying to figure out how to label my own.
I can't believe that for Bill Humansky, who's like one of the best dressed you ever see. He's always got some kind of crazy shoe or jacket on. So
discount. I go to discount shops to do that. That's my life and my mission. But I want to talk to you about all that, actually shopping and all that. But I want to talk to you about why you became a lawyer though, because I was, I'm interested in that. And I think it's important to get your little, the reason why you became an attorney. Cause I'm not even sure I really ever asked you that. And when you sent your bio over.
Shocking, right? Yeah. So, okay. So I think like we're all in this lawyer world, you know, where we kind of like take for granted that we're lawyers. Right. And some of us are just like, oh yeah, I'm a lawyer. But I was watching this show last week that kind of like reminded me of like the power of being a lawyer. And it reminded me of when I was going through all of those challenges when I was younger, you know, where I had like back-to-back legal issues. I was in a bad car accident. I like had to go through this lawsuit when this employer stole my identity. And like, when you're not a lawyer and you're going through stuff like that, you're just very stressed out because you just don't know the game you're in. And you don't know the rules. You don't know. You just are feel very like, I don't know what's going on. And when you become a lawyer, you're like, whatever happens, I know the game. I know how to, you know, like I have 1,000 friends that do this area of law. Like it's just something we kind of take for granted nowadays. You know, we're not really stressed out at the same level with legal problems, you know, because we understand it. It's just important to, I think, as a lawyer, bring yourself back to that place every so often to think about what it was like before you were a lawyer. And for a lot of lawyers, they may never have had a legal problem before they were a lawyer, so they don't really know what that's like. But I think that was such a gift that I went through all of that before I became a lawyer. And that's really like, I remember saying like, this is never going to happen to me again. Like, I'm never going to be in this situation. Right. So I think it's powerful to remember what all of our clients are feeling when they're facing a legal situation.
I think, you know, it's interesting that that couldn't be better said. I think part of that, and we've never talked about this, but when we talk about, everyone talks about like client communication, client relations, client experience. But what I'm hearing actually from beneath that just hit me is the process. So even if you explain the process to them, they've got to go through the process. And sometimes I think we as lawyers, if we haven't been through the process ourselves, we kind of forget their feelings around that process. So for instance, we can give them a step and say, oh, we're going to get your demand out. We can do A, B, and C and give them, what is a demand? What's an issue for money? How you do all that? But are we understanding what they're feeling about that? What that means to them to get a demand letter out to the insurance company, for example, what does that mean really for them? Right.
Yeah. And like, I remember I hated my lawyer at the time. Like I really hated him. I really thought he wasn't fighting for me. I thought he was just talking to me in a lot of legal jargon and I just didn't feel heard. And you know, like, I think that's made me a better lawyer. Like part of our law firm's unique proposition is we try to have the best customer service. And I always say like, we can't control sometimes the outcome, but we can control whether people feel heard, whether they have regular communication. And we try to educate them on this is what this means. You know, the entire client, like customer service is often not applied to legal. I think a lot of times even you might have a bad outcome or not the best outcome. And sometimes that's just the facts of the case, but you could still have a happy client, you know, because they were like, you know, you did everything you could for me, you know, and that's what we try to do. And I think a lot of shitty stuff that happens to us happens for your greater benefit down the road. And at the time I wouldn't have been like, oh, I would love to go through this again. But I think it's made me a better lawyer.
So tell us about your lawyering. When did you graduate school? How did you come to open your own law firm? Tell us a little bit about that before we start getting into our topic, because I think it's important for a lot of lawyers out there to know like what your background is and stuff and what you're doing now, what you're situated, where you plan on going.
So I went to business school in my undergrad in New York, which is where I'm originally from. And I always imagined I would have a business.
Where in New York?
I'm from upstate New York. So Poughkeepsie, New York. I went to Marist College. I was a business student. I wanted to be an entrepreneur since I was young. My dad is an entrepreneur. But then I got into all these legal situations, and that's when I made the decision to go to law school. Now, it was probably not the best like undergrad major to go to for law school, because I took like a lot of very hard upper level accounting courses, and my GPA was not my number one thing. I had a good like solid 3.0. And I was also a collegiate athlete. So I was on the crew team, and I worked all through college all the time. I always had like multiple jobs. So like preparing for law school, probably not the best plan, but I went. And so I came down to Atlanta, and I went to law school down here at John Marshall in Atlanta. And they gave me an opportunity to go to law school when a lot of other schools probably wouldn't have. And not because I wasn't smart, because I do feel now that I've like gone through this whole process that I feel like I'm very smart. It's just, you have to really be strategic when you want to go to law school, and you need to have a plan. And I got into the day program, but they told me I couldn't work. So I said, switch me to the night program. So then I went to night law school in Atlanta, and I worked during the day as a paralegal.
And I just want to say something. This is one of the reasons why it's interesting. I didn't know any of that about her.
I know.
But it wouldn't surprise me. Then that's why I think that I do connect with you, because I think that you, like, there's a lot of people that suffer from imposter syndrome, and it's something that we're going to talk about in other shows, but they almost feel like they don't belong here, or they didn't make it. And I don't know whether you've ever suffered that, but I do know one thing. The fact that you worked through college, worked through law school, were able to articulate, listen, I went to John Marshall when other schools didn't give me the opportunity. You know, those are things that people don't say when they,
or they don't know when they see me now, you know, like people only see the good stuff, you know? So yeah, that's the truth of the story. And long story short, I started working in the law school as well. And then I became friends with like the dean, and then I kind of got to take, I was like, I can't do this for 4 years because it's a longer program. So I kind of started going to school year round all during the summer to catch up. And so I graduated in 3 years, but I became like the president of the student body. I was very involved in law school. I told everyone from day one, like, I'm going to be a personal injury attorney. And I was networking from day one to become who I, you know, personal injury attorney in Atlanta. And when I graduated, I took the bar. I was the Barbary rep, right? I failed the bar the first time.
But you're right? The Barbary rep. That's awesome.
I'm the president of the student body and the Barbary rep. And that's, I failed awesome. The bar.
That's so funny. By the way, before we go further, I just had something. Tell us a quick tip for some of our law students who listen to our show. How do you, what's the best, let's say top three things you can do when you're networking while you're in law school. Quick, three things.
Dress like a professional all throughout law school. You never know. I met judges. I met people all the time at the law school, and you dress for success. Number one. Number two, have business cards in law school.
Oh, that's
and
a
number
good one.
Three, go to every event you can go to and just meet people.
So to sum that up, that's great. Three things is, that's just a great takeaway and something for you to think about for your future stuff. But I dress professionally all the time, but there's a why behind that. And then two is to get those business cards made up, which you can do a digital card nowadays, but get in people's phones. And three, get every event. Interesting. I think I didn't follow any of that, which was a mistake.
Everybody's got your own thing, but I would say like, I think if you
perfect advice.
You know, if you dress the part, I always dress professional. I feel like you kind of stand out. People think, oh, I would put this person in for an internship, you know, because when people are referring you, they don't want to look like a fool. Right. So you want to be the person they want to refer.
Right.
Yeah, but so I failed the bar. I was pregnant with my daughter, who's now eight. She's now eight, right? I didn't know I was pregnant with her when I took the bar the first time. So then, you know, the bar is only every 6 months, or it's like every 6 months. So I had to take it again. And I was 9 months to the day when I had taken it the second time.
Wow.
And, you know, that was very stressful. We like have jokes about her personality now because she went through two bars while I was pregnant, but I passed it. So I passed it. Then on the second try, I had my daughter, and then I opened my law firm when she was 2 months old.
Oh my God. Wow. So, and by the way, that brings us to, you know, and then you started right out, opening your firm. Why did, and I don't want to digress, but the thing is, that is a complete difference between men and women. And there's no way a man can tell you otherwise. Like, they can care for the baby, and I mean, care for their wife or their spouse who's carrying, but you're not carrying it. You're not dealing with the physical labor of that. You're not feeling with the stress of that. And that is a huge difference right then and there about the difference and why having a woman attorney who was pregnant during that time is important, because that's something that no man's going to be able to describe to a female law student or a woman that's carrying, I mean, or a lawyer now carrying, who's pregnant, running a practice, because we just don't, we've never done that. So I that's pretty amazing. I do want to ask you something though. Why did you just decide to go and open your own practice from day one, as opposed to working for someone, especially when you were pregnant?
I mean, I had been a paralegal, like I said, doing personal injury for 2-3 years at that point. And I felt like I worked for somebody at the time who gave me a lot of autonomy. And at that point, I felt like, I don't know, this might be just like the business owner in me, but like, I could do this.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're just used to, you're watching somebody who's the, but I was doing a lot of things behind the scene for the company. You know, I was like a lot of different hats. And so I felt like I can do this. And then, you know, when you have a baby, you need a lot of flexibility. So I just felt like I would have more control over my time. Plus, if you go back to my original, I always wanted to own my own business. So that was already there. So my dad would always just say, like, you know, you can start a law firm. He always just made it sound very easy, even though he wasn't a lawyer.
So I think that's very interesting. And for our listeners out there, whether you're man, woman, or anything, you know, here's the question that I would have in that situation. So you had always grown up wanting to own your own business. Your father was an entrepreneur. You went to law school. You worked as a paralegal behind the scenes. So was there ever a desire then to ever be a trial lawyer? Or was it to be, I want to own a business and hire trial lawyers, and let's just skip the whole, I'm going to learn how to be a trial lawyer, versus I'm going to open my own firm and figure out whether I'm going to hire them or refer them out or whatever?
So if I'm looking back at that time, back then, I didn't even know the difference between a trial lawyer and a non-trial lawyer. I just knew there was lawyers, right? Now, at, you know, when I went through law school, I started to understand that. But my ultimate idea was to own a law firm that had the best attorneys working there, because I always thought, like, I'm either going to become the best owner or I'm going to become the best lawyer and dedicate my life to that. And like, that's going to take me a really long time to become the best lawyer. It might take me 20, like, if my marketing proposition is I'm the best lawyer, that's going to take like 25 years, you know? So I would rather just become the best law firm owner. And I also felt like that was more in my strong suits than becoming the best trial lawyer. And
how old were you when you got to law school?
25.
Okay. So that, I'm going to, now, I went to law school 30 years ago, and I think that's what separates Jen and I from exactly where we're at in life, is I went to law school with the idea that I wanted to be the best lawyer. And I think there's nothing wrong with that, by the way. And I think that it's following your passion. But what I do find that's interesting to me, Jen, and I have to ask this question, because I hate people like, everyone like, oh, what do you think about the University of Florida, which is where I went to law school? I'm like, I have no effing clue what it's like 30 years later, if it's a good school or not. And I don't really care. Now, if I was invested in the school and stayed in the school, like some of my friends, maybe I would know because I'd introduce. So I have, when I preface this question, 30 years ago, you know, like I didn't know many people that were younger, 25, because there were always the guys. There was a guy in town here who went to school when he was 30. He knew he was already graduated med school. He knew exactly what he wanted to do. But most lawyers at 25, and I think that's when I went to school, maybe I was a little younger, I don't remember. We were only, I never met young people who hadn't had much business experience say, I'm going to go to law school so I can be a law firm owner and hire a lawyer. So, and you're smiling.
That's who I am. I mean,
no, I know, but 8 years, I'm saying in 2013, here's the question to you. People your age back then, because you're older now, but when you were 25 and your other classmates, give me a rough estimate of any of those people that told you the same thing you just told me now, which is,
I will tell you, there was other people like me. For example, one of my best friends is Zyra Solano. I think you know her. She was in law school with me, and there was this course at my school called Law Firm Practice Management, and she would go and we would be like, oh, like this is what we're gonna do when we have our own law firms. Like, our school was kind of known for people that wanted to start their own law firm. So I don't know if that's also a factor. I mean, I remember the conversation. Maybe it changed in the last 30 years. Maybe that's been a change. But if you look at the statistics, in the law schools should really be having this conversation, because I think it's like 80% of lawyers are own their own law firm or something crazy like that. Like solos, or I don't remember the statistic, but it's a lot of lawyers that end up one time or other in their career owning their own law firm.
Yeah, but there's a difference. You said something a little bit different. I think you can own your own law firm and still work in your law firm as a lawyer.
And be the head trial lawyer.
Two different
right.
mindsets.
Or the transactional lawyer. Right, Jeff, you have two different mindsets.
Yeah.
So not just trial lawyer, transactional work also. As opposed to, I own the business, I'll hire other people to do the work. And that's
I think that comes from my background with my dad, because my dad owned a very successful company in New York, and he had, you know, at one point hundreds of employees, and they did the work and he owned the company. So that was probably where I saw that. I also just knew a lot of my dad's friends that owners, you know, and it was always like, my dad would say, the reason you have a business is so that you don't have to do the work. Like,
right.
You know, that's fun. You can take a vacation, you can leave, you know, he would always say the business should still run when you're not there. So I didn't see how you could do both if you're doing all of the work yourself.
Well, I mean, just even from a marketing standpoint, you know, from my perspective, I mean, so smart of you. Like you said it yourself. You said coming out of law school, you are probably not going to be known as the best attorney, right?
Not really.
So you delegate that, basically that title, to manage your other lawyers in your firm so that you become the best law firm.
Like, but I'm going to tell you, that was really hard to do. Like, I remember the funniest thing. I was like, okay, I'm going to put an ad out for lawyers, right? I'm going to find a really good lawyer to work here. And I remember I got this guy and he wrote me this letter and he's like, why would a great lawyer work for you? You know? Like, I'm a young kid. I own a law firm and I'm trying to hire people that are 20 years my senior, you know? And it was very difficult. It was difficult in the beginning.
That's a great question though. To ask you right now. Why?
I can get the case. That's the answer. If you can get the case, then you can hire the good lawyers, right?
That's
a good lawyer want to work on good cases, right?
That's right. And I think that's, again, you learned that so much earlier than me. You know, I really was a good trial lawyer, but I wasn't great. When I say I was good, I mean, I know I was good. I won a lot of cases as a pro.
I feel like I could imagine you in the courtroom.
Yeah, I was nasty and I was good. I was ruthless. I could emotionally connect. But what was funny is, I think when I first started thinking about hiring lawyers, I used to have an ego and I didn't want to be threatened by that. And I think that's changed now. Like, I'm always, again, you're way ahead of me. Now I'm always about I think almost every single lawyer in here has a skill set that was greater than mine. And some of the three or four strongest lawyers here are definitely better trial lawyers than I am. And they're evolving, and I'm proud of that. It's kind of like I've done my share of trials, but I don't even need to care about that any longer. And when I am talking to other people coming here, I'm like, yeah, I've got a great reputation, but it's not about me. It's about the lawyers here. And I've decided that I was going to hire, you want me, but you really don't want me. You actually want this person who's great with sex crimes. You want this person who is actually great with domestic violence, or this person that's great with DUIs. They walk the floor with me if I had to try a case with them. So I think that
Don't you think, Bill, like there's a stepping into that as an owner that you have to go through where you kind of like, okay, now I have earned the privilege to have these people work for me, and now I have to like become the leader that they need, you know? And it's not about you. And I feel like you, the way you've always talked about the lawyers at your firm has been with such respect and love and admiration. And I've always felt that from our conversation. So I do think there are a lot of lawyers out there that really struggle with having someone who's more talented than them. But I think that is only in disservice to the law firm in the long term.
Yeah. I mean, it's not to say there's not conflict or that I don't, if I look at my lawyers and, you know, there's not certain issues, like one of them, I would like them to smile a little bit more when he comes in the morning to clients, and another one needs to stop complaining, or another one needs to be, have more gratitude, but they are more, they are better than us, and I better than me. And I think it's a reckoning that a lawyer, a law firm owner has. I would, when I'm listening to you, because again, I think you are smarter than me. You didn't have an ego as large as, no, we all have different levels of intelligence. What I mean by that is I'm a slow learner. It's not disparaging myself, Jen. I appreciate you about to come.
I don't think you're a slow learner. My observations of you, but you always say it. And I'm like, I don't know why he thinks that.
Because I'm 55 and I got the battle scars to prove it. But I think my point is, I think each lawyer has to make, a lawyer with an ego has to have that reckoning. I call it the reckoning. They have to, yeah, they have to understand that in order to move forward, if they really are truly tired of trial work, or being the person that can't go on vacation, or being the person that's constantly dragged away from their family, they have to have the reckoning, because you can't have both. You cannot have a good reputation of a law firm if you hire shitty lawyers. You got, and so you yeah. might as well hire people that are better than yourself.
There was a coach I had for a while, and he used to say this. He used to say, you know who's the best lawyer when I'm sick? Not me. You know who's the best lawyer when I'm on vacation? Not me. You know who's the best lawyer when I'm handling a family emergency? Like, there are times in your life when even if you were the best lawyer, your life would not allow you to be the best lawyer in those moments. And it's like, same thing with intake. Like, you know who's the best intake person in the firm? Me. But you know who's the best when I'm on vacation? Not me. You know, like, right. Having some type of freedom from your business where you get time to recharge and do other things than just the law firm is also really important. And it's really hard when you're the only like top lawyer yeah. there.
And I want to turn this now to the subject that we were talking about is, you know, as a woman, you've had some of your own challenges. As you indicated, you started off the show telling us that you opened your firm and you know, it was 2 months old, right? So tell us a little bit about the challenge of being a woman and running a law firm. You're married, obviously, I know this, but for the audience, how long have you been married?
We've been married for 10 years. So we got married during law school. And then, you know, we have three kids. My daughter is 8. She's always the same age as the law firm. And then I have a 6-year-old, and then I have a 1-year-old. And, you know, it's funny. I've never gone through my life saying, I'm a woman. This is unique challenges. This is hard. Like, I feel like you just go and you just face it and you just deal with it. And then you might look back and say, oh, that was kind of hard. I just was like, I'm going to start this law firm. And then, you know, there's a lot of juggling and a lot of like mom guilt that can come into play when you have young children and you're working. And there's just a lot of like societal messaging that's like, harmful, I think, to women, that I had to, I think that's at that time I started diving into a lot of coaching. And I was like, I got to find people that are smarter, you know, more down the road than me, because it was just, it was very confusing. Like at that time, I remember my life was in a lot of like chaos. There's, you know, just wearing a lot of hats as a new business owner and just kind of juggling a lot of things. And, you know, fortunately I was introduced to some coaches that were very pivotal in my life at that time. And they were teaching me things that I think, you know, gave me a leg up, you know, during that time.
So let's talk about that. Like, what are some of the societal messages that when you were pregnant, because there's also personal messages about from society when you're carrying a baby, and I mean, well, all that.
People say, like, you just had a baby, should I send you this case? You know, you're trying to build a business, you're trying to start a business, and people have some serious concerns whether they send you a case if you're going to be able to service it, you know, because the assumption is you're not going to be able to work on the file or whatever, you know.
Did you get that? Did you get that assumption from male lawyers and male forces, or did you also from across the board, even females, you're getting that from just people in general?
Yeah. A lot of messaging also from other women, you know, how are you able to, you know, I could never do what you're doing. How could you leave your child with a babysitter? You know, like just a lot of like projecting and negativity. So you're kind of like, you don't really fit in with women that, you know, are non-working. And then, you know, there are the other category of working women who have no children. And then you're kind of in the middle, you know.
Did you have postpartum depression with any of your pregnancies? And if so, did it impact work at all? Or how did you resolve any of that?
So I did not with my daughter, fortunately, but with my middle son, I did. But the thing about postpartum, I don't know if you guys have dealt with somebody that's had it. I was never formally diagnosed, but I'm like self-diagnosing looking back. I was not thinking rationally. Like, you're not sane. You're just thinking really irrationally. Like, I remember my mom bought me these pajamas, and I just got really upset. And I was like, really upset over these pajamas. It made no sense whatsoever, you know? And so like, looking back, I'm like, that wasn't rational thinking. But I also think I had two kids under two, and you're just, you know, if you've had children, you're not sleeping. You're just not in a good, healthy mental space. But the good thing about that event of like going through all of that is really what launched me to get into all the coaching. Cause I remember I was like, this is not working. I need to hire a coach. And so that's when I got into the coaching, and the coaching was like, you shouldn't be doing it all. You're trying to do too much. You need to hire more people. You need to delegate more. And all of that was the answer for me.
Did your husband, this is just very open, I don't want a podcast, but I'm curious, did your husband ever struggle with you working? Was he fully supportive with that? Did he ever, was there ever any conversations about like, maybe you should back off a little bit? Did you ever talk to him about backing off his work and saying, maybe you should be the one staying at home? Or did you ever have any of those kind of conversations? And I'm keeping it real because I think that there's, you know, a lot of young people out there who are making those decisions, and there are conversations like that. So were there any of those kind of conversations?
So when I met my husband in college, I was in business school. I was very clearly going to have a business at some point. If you knew me, I grew up like living, breathing, eating entrepreneurial discussions. So I think if you knew me, that would be an irrational thought to have. Like I remember saying to him, I'm going to have a big life. I'm going to have a lot of stuff. I'm doing big things. Are you down for that? Because if you're not down for that, this is not the girl for you. So like, I was always very clear with him who I am. And thankfully my husband grew up with a working mom. And so he doesn't actually know the life of having like a stay-at-home mom, where I grew up with a stay-at-home mom. So it's kind of been a gift for me because he doesn't know the life of like having anything else, right? His mom was working, she's doing things, she's very independent. And maybe that's why he was attracted to me, right? Usually there's some connection there. So my husband has literally always been 199% supportive. He knows who I am as a person. And like, if I didn't do this, I would not be happy. Like I would not be fulfilled. And so he's like, do all the things. In fact, when we were together during law school, I went to Scotland and lived there for the whole summer. He went during our relationship, he went and lived in Hawaii. Like we just don't have a relationship where we would try to like tell the other person what to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You just try to love each other unconditionally, which sometimes is tough decisions with that because there's pain, meaning you can miss someone, be away from someone, but you know, at the end of the day that's what they want. And that's how you build a relationship. I think that's really cool, actually.
You have to also, I think you have to like have the relationship. I always say the relationship you have with yourself is more important than any relationship you have with any other human. And like, you should only be with someone that supports you for who you are 100%.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I have a question. So along with the support from your husband, just aside from that, talking about you, the time that you were going through the pregnancy and actually the birth, you've done it 3 times, right? So obviously something was clicking where you're like happy. I want to kind of translate that into the business side of things where you're still running a business. Did your business ever, did you see it kind of like go down a little bit while during that, maybe, I don't know how much time you took off or not, but Bill, you know, he can't get his hands out of the business like long enough. I mean, I'm really actually proud of him this year. He's like managed to go places and kind of leave sales to do their thing, leave marketing to do their thing. Like it can actually run, you know, the ship is still going now that he's out. And I don't think it took you a long time to be able to do that. You did this 3 times where you probably, you know, weren't in labor and still like making sales calls at the same time. Right. So how did my
first child, obviously I had her before I started the law firm. She was a baby. So, but the law firm, when you first start a law firm, is not like full blown at that point. It's ramping up, but it's still like you have a couple clients. It's kind of manageable. But the time I had my second son 2 years later, the law firm was like really rocking and rolling. But I didn't have enough people. It was very stressful. There was just a couple of us, but there was a lot of work and I was taking calls in the hospital. It was horrible. That was my breaking point. That was like, wow, you've got to do something different. I never had a maternity leave really with those two. When I had my son in 2020, I took a 3-month off-grid maternity leave. And the firm was built. I spent probably a year, like from the time I knew I was pregnant, orchestrating and engineering a maternity leave to go completely off-grid, where I just would get reports. And that's how the firm was run by the integrator / law firm administrator. And it was a really eye-opening experience. And I would encourage anyone who has a business to do this because we were pretty much as running the same numbers as when I was there. And then I'm like, why? I'm here 40, 50 hours a week and we're doing the same numbers. What the fuck am I doing with my life? You know, like this firm can run without me. And it was very, very, very liberating. Now, I would not just recommend doing that like randomly. Like we planned it. I did a week off grid as a trial run before we did that other one. And we had to see what would break. And a lot of it had to do with the money and the financials, because I was really involved in that at the time. But that was a very liberating experience. And our coach, like a lot that had been set as like a challenge to a lot of law firm owners in the coaching program I was in. So I had seen a lot of other people do it. So I knew it was possible, but the firm kept going. No issue.
Wow. Can you imagine that?
No, but I mean, it's fun.
You can do it. If you haven't done it, have you not done 3 months off grid?
So what I've done is a little different. Like I've always been involved in the sales process on the criminal side and even on PI tick intakes. And I've slowly gotten out of a lot of that. But what becomes very difficult is when you're not doing a lot of digital. We do a lot of digital, but there are people, let's be, you know, I'll be honest with you. It's very hard when a friend of yours is a partner, let's say, at a large commercial firm, right? And he's calling you and he knows that you're not going to handle the case. You've educated him over the years. So that's cool. It can get to your staff, but he's calling you and saying, hey, you know, would you talk to this guy? It's his son and it's a client of his. That's a Fortune 500 company. Someone's got to talk to him. And it could be my staff, and I do trust them to talk to them. And a lot of times, actually, I can pass that call on. But sometimes you want to take that call because the thing is, you want to let your friend know that he's important to you, and you're going to take that call. So that call may happen when you're in France or Houston or Chicago, whatever. And you almost want those calls to happen because if they don't happen, you know, if you have an advertising-based firm, that gets filtered through. But if it's a relationship building firm, then sometimes you got to take those calls. Now, I always, what I'll do is when I talk to people, I'm like, you don't want to talk to me. I'm just giving you a call because you're friends with my friend. And I want you to know that we're here for you, but I'll fuck it up. So I want you to go talk to this person. She's an attorney that runs my intake team. And I have an attorney that intake. She's very experienced. So I'd love you to talk to her because if I get your information about your kid or whatever, it's just going to get lost. Cause I, you know, I was a lawyer. I'm not, you know, I don't, you know, whatever. And then they usually buy into that, but I'm still talking to them and yeah. You could, but that's part like of what we do.
Much of that is your day to day. I mean, is that a more of a one-off or is that like really your day to day?
So, you know, I don't practice, maybe I have one case left and I don't practice anymore, but I mean, Jen, honestly, a lot of people know me and it's not like it could be day to day. It's not a one-off thing. A lot of people in Orlando know me and, you know, like.
You have a very heavy referral-based business. I'm sure if we sat down, there would be a way to take some automation into some of that.
Yeah. Well, and some of that can happen with it. I'm not bothered by it because even though it's day to day, it's not that much day to day. And if I'm in Europe, I can certainly Slack a friend of mine who's a partner at a firm and say, I hired for those positions. If I didn't have a lawyer that was running the intake, a lot of people say, don't spend that kind of money on a lawyer. I'm like, well, there's credibility.
Yeah. I mean, it just buys you a little bit more freedom because you have someone super qualified.
Right.
To answer. So I don't think there's an issue with that. I just think the challenge is if it's one-off stuff like that and it's a referral here or there, but I do think a lot of it, what I was getting out of in those 3 months was putting, for my personal experiences, I was putting out fires that my team could have gotten to. They might take 24 hours where I could put that fire out in 5 minutes. Obviously, as the owner, you have a lot more authority, so you have more ability. Sometimes they have to go through channels, but what I noticed is they were doing all the stuff that I would ultimately do, just it might take them slightly more time. And it was like, I don't need to do that. Like, I don't need to just get in front of them.
Yeah. You know, you also had a breaking point too. Like you said, the second time you're breaking, you know, you had a breaking point where you knew you weren't going to let that happen again to yourself.
No, it's not a way to live. I mean, now I'm very committed to a lot of things in my personal life. Like I have a very involved fitness routine that is a high priority to me. I used to throw that out the window. I never made time for my fitness. And, you know, I was an athlete, like fitness is an important part of my life. And like, I always found the excuse to like, oh, there's too much work. I can't. And now, you know, I've been very committed to that. I have really important things that are must do's for me. And I've created the space for me to do those things. And whether it's, you know, be something my kid needs to go to, I just feel like I have a much more balanced life now.
Yeah, exactly. And I asked that because I wanted to see if Bill's actually had that or not.
Yeah. I mean, not until recently. So for example, I used to be the kind of guy who always preached, I could take 100 days. In fact, I already hit my 100th day, 100 days off doing whatever I want to do. That's 100 days every year. Been doing that for years. However, if this is with me,
yeah,
it's not because you're working. And we learned after COVID that I was always working virtually. So, but I think that's changed now. So I'll give you an example, very interesting. Because if you're out of the business, and you know this because your dad and your experiences, I was in Houston and I went over to the Post Oak Hotel. It's a beautiful, brand new hotel, nicest hotel in Houston. I'm sitting down because, and if I'm not on the phone, I'm not on sales calls. I've let all that go. The phone is there with me, but I'm not looking at the office, not looking at the Slack channel. I met a guy that owns over 150 car dealerships, who's got a $2 billion market cap. And I only know he's got a $2 billion market cap because he was humble. But my sons, of course, are in finance, looked him up, and they're already talking to him about hedge funds and all this other stuff. But I wouldn't have the opportunity. And now him and his wife are going to come to my house because they actually had a house in Jacksonville. They live in Charlotte. And I don't want anything from the guy, but it's certainly a guy that I'll know and have communications. And we were talking business and opportunities. So, you know, you don't have that if you're constantly... Right. So as an owner, getting off the grid is about creating other opportunities, but you can't be stuck in your day to day.
Time to think, Bill. Like, I think that time to think is something we undervalue. And like somebody was telling me this example a while ago, like you have like this sword, which is like your mind as the owner, right? And it's sharp, but then you use this sword on like paper, and it's like you're dulling this sword by doing all these menial tasks that really don't require your brain power, that somebody else in the firm can do and is handling, and you're getting involved in it. And then you're dulling the resource that you really need to use to think about the next marketing project or the next strategic hire or like the higher level stuff you really need to think about, but you've been like bogged down in all this nonsense.
So Jen, you know, that's, just an amazing analogy. And think about, as I'm listening to you, I think about another thought came to mind. You know, they say a lot of people are more creative when they're in their 20s, like Beethoven and, you know, just our artists and everything. You know, it's that first, second, third album. But maybe what it is, so what's the added, you know, so as you get older, you hit your 30s and 40s and 50s, you just don't have that juice anymore? No, maybe it's because we fill our brain up. That's an amazing topic.
A lot of stuff. You know, Bill Gates has think weeks. You know, if you watch, he has times where these people, they go off grid and they have great space. So I think about that a lot. Like, is there enough space in my current life for me to have breakthrough ideas? And I'm just always constantly battling that. I'm not saying that there are not times like, as the owner, you're going to have to step into emergencies here and there. You lose a key player, you're going to have to take that role on. Like, let's not be kidding ourselves. There are times when you're going to have to step up and take that emergency phone call that nobody else can de-escalate.
Well, let's go even further than that. As a parent of young children, if you want to be involved in your kid's life, you can get a nanny. You could do a lot of things to kind of, help. You can get someone to cook in your house. You can get someone to do your lawn. You can do a lot of that stuff, but there's certain, you got to go to the kids' games, right? You can't.
There's certain things that are going to be a top priority. I mean, I will say a conversation that we've had behind the scenes is it's really important to identify that there are an entire cast of people that make our lives possible. I'm sure you have a bunch of people, Bill. Like, I don't like this idea that we're doing it all. Like, come on, that's not the truth. You know, there's a lot of people that make this show go forward.
Yeah. And that, I think that's my point, but I'm also, when you're filling your stuff up, Jeff had mentioned, you know, you had mentioned about think weeks. Well, if you got to take your kids to a practice, if you got to take them to a game, you, even if you have someone else take them, you are probably as a parent going to attend the game. You may attend the recital, you may attend. And so even in that stage, I think that's hard for parents who are business owners to create that creative space when your children are very young, especially.
When there's a lot of activities and a lot of stuff to manage, it is, you know, something that is not possible always. But I will say, I challenge any person, we're not talking think year. We're talking think week. I mean, you can't find the time between December 25th and January 1st to just chill out and take some time. I think we can all challenge ourselves that we're not creating that space, and we can. Day to day.
I love listening to a woman say that more than anything, because I think men, you know, like my wife will, she, if she was sitting here, Jen, she, I mean, she's gotten way better, but like, you know, I, when I met her, I'm like, I don't want a woman that's not going to work. You either work or I'm not going to be in a situation.
So, I'm curious. Why don't you want a woman that won't work?
Well, that was years ago. Okay. That's when I was your, like, wait, when I was 22, I came from a family that my dad left and my mom worked three jobs. Like your husband, Yeah. So I was like, listen, I don't want to be the guy. I don't need you to cook for me. I don't need you to, I mean, like I cook for myself. I was independent. Right. Yeah. No, but
I think that's good though too.
Right. But I think my point is hearing a woman say that's interesting because I did, and I was selfish. And I was voted least likely to get married in law school, but I was always a lawyer first, Jen. So, and a lot of men, you know, in my age group, that's what we grew up as, is our business was first. And that doesn't mean I didn't raise my children or wasn't a good husband or a good spouse and good father. But hearing a woman say that you got to take the time for yourself, because what that means.
Not the kids, not the marriage. Right. You really do have to make sense, because who are you going to be good for?
Right. Because December 25th to January 1st, you're taking a family vacation with your family. That's not necessarily time to have think space because you're still engaged with your, you can take a day out of that, or it can be that week and you decide to do another family vacation. I think my point is though, that's not taking a vacation with your family, unless you're going to spend that time.
It is not a vacation, Bill.
Say that again.
A vacation with children is typically not what I would deem like a vacation, especially with small children.
100%.
You need a new vacation. You need a vacation off that, because you're actually in a confined space where you're normally in a much bigger space and you don't have your resources, like the kids' stuff. It's stressful. Let's be really honest. Like vacations with kids can be very stressful.
I think maybe I'm just an old guy, but it seems to me that that's a message for young women attorneys to hear, because it's okay to have a vacation with your family and then want to take a vacation with your husband alone or by yourself or with your girlfriends.
You have to have time with your friends, with your spouse. I grew up with that. My parents always went on a vacation by themselves, and then we had a family vacation, and I would go stay with my grandparents. And like, you know, I think that's very healthy and normal. But I also travel alone for business by myself a lot. And I do things, and my husband goes on trips by himself. I think, you know, this idea that we always need to all be together, it's not realistic and it's not healthy. And, you know, you do have to have support during the daily weeks. Like we're talking about these one-offs, like this Think Week or whatever, but day to day, like I don't do any laundry. I don't cook. There's a lot of things I've chosen to not do so that I can have some time to myself as well. We hire people to do a lot of different things in the home. And even when I didn't have the money, like we had a part-time babysitter. If all we could afford back then was that, and that just gave me a little bit of space to work, and you build up. And, you know, one day I remember I came home and I took my husband's lawnmower and I like put it on the side for free. And I was like, you're not doing this anymore. Cause like, if that's the excuse why we can't go out on a date on Saturday, cause you're mowing the lawn, like I'm not down with that.
Yeah. I think unless it's something that is giving someone pleasure, which
therapeutic,
yeah. But if it's not, and you're just doing the thing to save money, or you're doing it because it's what you're supposed to do. I like you, and we had those conversations off air. I learned a long time ago. I remember telling my wife when you know, I was gonna put my house up for sale. I remember, because I didn't want to be in a situation where I was stressed out, because I needed the space to think and have people do stuff for us, even if we were on a tight budget. And that's what you're saying. If you had a part-time.
Yeah. Even if you're just starting out, I think the key is hiring someone to do your household cleaning. If you're a lawyer and you're doing your household cleaning, that's a real problem. I know a lot of lawyers that are still doing it. Coming home to a clean house is very like, it's de-stressing for me. You can get people to help you manage with laundry. Like if I never do laundry again, it's too soon. Like laundry is just not something that lights me up, but it has to be done. You can get valet dry cleaning. you can get people that will like do some in-home cooking. You can get, you know, people that you'd really trust to help you shuttle these kids around. You know, there's a lot of different things you can get, but you have to break through your mind of like the idea that there are amazing people out there that can, because there's always the horror stories, you know, and that's what I think holds people back from hiring more help.
Yeah, it's almost analogous to work, but it's harder because it's your family. But the reality is, like, I think COVID helped a lot with that too. Like, you know, like shopping, you know, get food delivery.
Food delivery all day, every day. If I never go back to the grocery store, that's too soon as well for me, because it's just so much time that's wasted. Like you're puttering around in there. Then you got to unload everything. It's like for $9 delivery, you can, you know,
What could you be doing better during that $9 delivery? Yeah. I mean, that's 100.
It goes back to how much your time is worth.
Yeah. Right? How much is your time worth?
You have to value your time at a very high level. My kind of like key strategy for life is time with my family, time to do the work I need to do, and then time for myself. And those are the top three priorities. All the other things can go below that. Yep. I mean, I also have time with my friends, but I also consider that time with myself and like, you know, it's hard. I think having friends is also challenging when you have young kids, you know, keeping up time to keep relationships. This thing I saw recently was a friend inventory list annually, and like saying like, does this relationship still serve me? Do I have the time to put into this friendship? And I think that's one of the hardest things when you're with a young family, is making time to keep friendships and professional relationships.
Well, I think you've already done this, but I think because we're coming to our time to end the show, but I'd like to, because I you are so smart, and because I want to say this, Jen, let's talk as if we're talking to some young lawyers, and especially young women that may be considering having a family or have a young family and they have their own law firm or they're about to open their own law firms. What would be those three things that you would prioritize for them? What would you suggest to them? You already kind of said what you do for yourself, but taking yourself back 8 years ago, maybe those three things that you could have done differently or that you did do correctly. Somebody
that wants to start a law firm that's young
and who's pregnant or maybe who's considering having a young family.
I think, you know, if you want to have a successful law firm as a woman, you need to hire people. The biggest issue for women is that they just don't hire enough people. And what I can say from where I am now, 8 years in, my law firm is easier to manage now than year one. Like the more people you get, the more manageable the firm comes. I actually think it gets more fun. My law firm is a lot better. I used to think that'll be more stressful having all these people there, but it's actually the inverse. You get better talent, higher level caliber people. Just get the firm up off the ground and start hiring would be my first thing. Number two, 100% believe in yourself. There is nothing stopping you other than your mindset. You can do this. Like if it hasn't been done or it has been done, it doesn't matter. If you want to do it, it's possible. Don't listen to any of the naysayers because they are out there. And then number three, define what it means to be a good mom for you and throw out any other definition, because I sat down one day and I wrote what it would mean to me when my kids are 18 to be a good mom. And it was very different than I think some of the classical definitions.
So don't assume other people's projections and start by writing out what you want to define as what is a good parent, a good mother.
Good dad. Like what is a good dad? Like you have to think about what that means to you. It's also like, what does the word success mean to you? It means something different to everyone. And you have to basically only hold yourself to your own personal standard of that.
That's some great advice. It's great advice for anyone considering a family, opening a firm, great advice for young women. I do have to ask you a question about point number one. You made it a point that women don't hire enough people. And before the show, you talked about a statistic in 2018 when Amex talked about women and law and businesses Why is it that you think women have a more of our, if this is true in your mind, why do you think women have a harder time hiring people than, for example, men in that situation?
I don't know if it's risk tolerance. I don't know if it's the idea that they're just nervous to make a hire. I think there is also a societal idea that women can do it all. And when you say you're going to do it all, it's almost shameful to hire people, right? Because I should be able to do it all. I should be able to do the books and the marketing and the intake and the lawyering. And you're in this mindset of I should do it all. I reject that 100%. I think that's how women stay really small. When I meet a woman and she starts saying how she should do it all, I immediately identify that as a limiting belief.
I hope you guys are listening, because that's gold right there.
So for our audience, Jen, where can they find you, reach you? What would you like to, just one final thought for them, and we'll close the show.
They can reach me at Jennifer@ATL Injury Law Group. That's my email, our website, Atlanta Personal Injury Law Group. You can look us up, we're on all the social platforms. So my one takeaway that I live my life by is to try to surround yourself with people that are smarter than you and further along. And, you know, sometimes that means someone who's, you know, 10 steps ahead of you, but even you can learn from people who are 3 or 4 steps ahead of you. You don't want to be the biggest fish in the room. You strive to continue to find circles where you're the smallest.
That's why we all want to hang out with the lawman.
No, the lawman is always trying to find people that is bigger than him, because the lawman doesn't know anything except to have a good time. So
me and Bill both subscribe to this thought, and that's why we probably are friends.
Yep, 100%. And
that's really cool.
I enjoy having you on the time on the show. I don't know if I'm going to head up to Atlanta for Chris video. I may show up in December, but you know, you may come down here with your kids.
I will see you, if not in the next mastermind, but hopefully you'll be in Atlanta and I'll see you, or, you know, in the spring, there's a bunch of, you know, there's national trial lawyers and all that. I don't know if you're going down there.
I may. John Fisher has a mastermind in Curacao I'm going to facilitate. So, it's 3 or 4 days. If I pronounce it right, Curacao, am I pronouncing it right?
You know? I just joined another mastermind with Daryl Isaacs. You know him?
No.
Yeah, I'll have to talk to you about it. We're considering adding another member.
Oh, really?
It firms between 20 and 100 people.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, let's talk about that. That'd be cool. We'll talk about that another time. I'll give you a shout or a call.
Okay.
All right. Enjoyed having you on the show, and I can't do the lawman out. So, oops, I did.
You can do it like that, yeah.
Ah, I just did it. Oh, I don't want to do it. Yeah, lawman out. I lost my voice, literally.
Preserve that voice, okay.
Yes, I got to. It was great seeing you.
Thanks for having me, guys.
You've been listening to the Lawman's Lounge podcast. To ensure that you never miss an episode, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast player. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.